Hello, my name is Tommy, and I'm an adult child. Big red book on page 302 says an adult child is someone whose actions and decisions as an adult are guided by childhood experiences grounded in self-doubt and fear. Here today to share my story so far, my experience, my strength, and my hope. First, let me thank Mary, Duncan, Janie, Amber, Patrick, and Michael for all the work in putting this meeting on. I do wish we were in person. I'm a bit of a hugger, and I don't know what's going to happen when we all get back together again. But I wanted to see you guys face to face. Plus, I would have made some kick-ass cookies for the snack. When I first came to ACA about a year ago, read the laundry list for the first time, I thought, like many of you, holy cow, who has been following me around all my life? I mean, you go down the list and it's just phenomenal. One after another came approval seekers, lost our identity, me. Came alcoholics, married them or both, or found another compulsive personality, such as a workaholic to fulfill our sick abandonment needs. Overdeveloped sense of responsibility, just on and on and on. It just hit home. Identify with the problem and so many more. And I'm trying to live in the solution. Come to realize this will be a lifelong journey. I've had some wonderful changes to my life and relationships, but I know I have a long way to go. This journey so far has been a wonderful chance to recover my soul, show me the choice of living in emotional sobriety, and probably save my life. I want to say first that I realize now my successes in life and my failures in life were and never will be simply black and white. There's complications in every way we walk. This journey of preparing for speaking has been a tough one. We talk about buried memories. Good God, do they hurt? I know years ago, I had a friend in the meeting, and he said he felt like giving up. He said it was too hard. And I was brand new and just getting to the real exciting stuff, the stuff that seemed to free up and clean up. And hadn't really delved into a lot of the past. My thought probably would have been along the lines of, get over it. It's the past. What do you got to do? Keep moving forward. That's not our walk. That's not our journey. And that's not healthy. And I can understand why coming up against some of the memories, some of the feelings, and how they rush into you. It's not like, oh, here's a memory. Let's look at it. All of a sudden, it can just overtake your big butt. Well, my big butt. So this has been interesting, preparing to speak. I sometimes have felt also, wow, others' experience is so much harder than mine. But I realize this is counterintuitive and it's not a competition. I used to work with a bunch of people in AA, and when I told them I was now in ACA, to a man, they all shivered and said, holy crap, that's where the hard work is being done. And I understand that now. I'm the youngest of four and the only boy. And yes, even muted, I can hear your internal voices saying, well, that explains a lot. I was born in 1957 to parents who had lived in a very real way through the Depression, World War II, etc. Don't talk, don't feel, don't ask. Children are to be seen, not heard. Get over it. You should be ashamed of yourself. This hurts me more than it hurts you. You want to cry? I'll give you something to cry about. These were just some of the prevalent mantras of my upbringing. In our step work, we deal with families of origin, and Linda has helped me discover something I never thought about before. And I call it the different car seat concept. As you'll hear later, her father would drive home from adventures, turn the car lights out at night while speeding down a steep mountain highway. This frightened and scarred her immensely. As one of the smaller children, she huddled down in the back seat. So at one family gathering, I asked one of her sisters how they saw it. And she said, it was really cool. Different car seats. When my mom passed away, I spoke at her funeral, and I told the assembled crowd who held her in high regard, as I did. I told them while they all knew her as a wonderful and kind and generous member of the church, a great hostess, baker, and seamstress, that she also possessed the reflex speed of a cobra. She could reach a paddle or a wooden spoon or a stick on top of the fridge and strike before you knew it was coming. I thought it was kind of funny, yet afterwards, my sisters came up to me and said I made it sound like Mom beat us all the time. Clearly different car seats. Recently, in fact, right before I started attending our meetings, I asked my oldest sister, didn't Mom ever hit you and your sisters? She told me that Dad and Mom never laid a glove on them. So it was just me. Why? Why did she hit me like that? My mom was raised in a large family in the Pacific Northwest. She had five sisters and only one brother, who happened to be the youngest as well. And yeah, that might have been an issue. My grandfather managed the smelter in Kellogg, Idaho. They lived on an idyllic little farm where most of the vegetables and fruit for the family were grown. My mother was ballsy as hell. She was a babysitter kind of slash nanny for a local pharmacist. And in 1936, for some reason, he moved his family to San Luis Obispo, California. And my mom picked up as an 18-year-old girl and moved with them out on her own. My father was born in Oklahoma, the only boy, with six sisters, and the pattern keep growing. His father had a custom wheat threshing business, and he lost an arm and some of the machinery. He sold the business. My sense of humor that's not always appropriate, I guess you could say he sold it for an arm and a leg, but maybe not. He moved the family to southeastern Colorado and bought a grocery store. Depression hits, compounds problem. My grandfather chooses to commit suicide in a truly gruesome way. He ingests lye, and the family watches him die over a series of days and weeks. At 11 years old, my dad is sold into servitude to a distant uncle to help pay the bills for the family. It wasn't a particularly happy time, but he lies about his age at 16 and joins the Army. And he's posted up at Camp Roberts in San Luis Obispo. When he can finally get enough scratch together, he's able to send for his mother and his sisters and starts the California chapter of his young life. He goes on to have a really long and illustrious military career. 32 years, he's awarded the Bronze Star, multiple Purple Hearts and other meritorious awards. Retires as a lieutenant colonel, having received both his high school diploma and his college diploma while serving. He was an amazing man, and as a warrior, he still, when I got to know him later, was the most widely read gentleman I ever know. Musically, would teach me things. It was just amazing. The life that he showed was fantastic. As the youngest, I miss a lot of the deployments. I was born in Colorado, moved to Germany at 1 year old, Indiana at five, and Goleta at eight. Really didn't get to know my dad much until I was in sixth, seventh grade. Something changed in the way I was treated when we moved to California, and I have no clue what it was about. I was a little mischievous, but I was a pretty good kid. I was paddled once by my dad back in Indiana. He actually started with a slipper, and I started laughing because it didn't hurt. And then he hit me with the belt. And one other time, like when I was probably in about seventh grade, I got in a fight with the pastor's kid. I lied to my mom about it, and I got the belt. And that was the last time my dad ever touched me. My mom would spank or hit me. I sometimes remember her being extra mad and forceful when she'd break a blood vessel in her hand. I remember wishing she would hurt herself on the little rivets in my jeans. She once flung a paddle at me so hard and I moved, she glanced the piano bench that I was taking lessons on and cracked a well-veneered piano seat. I was made to sit by her at the dinner table if I wasn't behaving well. If I made a misstep of elbows on the table, reaching across the sister, talking with food in my mouth or some other rule, I was kicked really hard under the table with pointed shoes. I think my mom didn't know what to do with me. I think her life was tough with my dad away for years at a time, maybe not wanting to see a young boy shown favoritism or whatever. I accept that she did the best she could, knowing she brought with her patterns from her upbringing. I don't think moving around the world with four kids in tow all by yourself was very easy. Just seemed that when we moved to Goleta, things got worse. My dad was gone on a 3-year tour. I'd just gotten glasses and I was really quite small. Luckily, before my dad left, he recognized what was going to happen and taught me how to fight. But still, I had to fight my way home or run home the first 3-4 weeks of my visit, moved to California. This was kind of my life. I was a little bit, this is where the abandonment issues would come in. Sisters at home, and they weren't friends, they were just competition. And I was really kind of just get out there, solve your own problems, fight your own fights, go your own way. This freaking 8 years old, I don't know, it was tough. So really the feeling of being all alone and nobody on your side, I would never wish this feeling on anybody else. When I got home, I kind of shed the armor off of fighting my way back, but when I got inside, I tended to want to be invisible, not to get in trouble, not to have one of my sisters narc me out for something I did or didn't do, and take a hit. All of this and more helped create or allow a false self to take over. I've joked with some fellow travelers and understand from our readings, a lot of my style was useful in my eventual career and athletic endeavors as I grew. Never give up, polite like nobody had ever seen. Do a job to perfection so you couldn't be punished. Fight to win, there's no fucking second place. Yeah, but at what cost? Oh my gosh. I feel like I need to make amends to everyone I've come in contact with from 10th grade on. I was a good guy in a lot of ways, but I wanted to show you up. I wanted to put you down or show that I was better in some way, shape, or form. I had a really odd sense of insecurities. I would think or present myself to be better than, and yet inside feel like I didn't belong. I was less than. And that was a lonely, lonely walk as well. I would love to get into arguments because I could out-talk you or maybe show that I knew more. I'd love to get into an athletic competition because even if you had better skills or were bigger and stronger, I wouldn't give up. Until you got tired, take a break, or made a mistake. I became awfully quick to mock others or use sarcasm to show how clever I was and to put others in some sort of bullshit light that I thought elevated me. Maybe because we moved so much, I really felt like I never fit in, was never good enough, never cool enough, never enough. Just was tough. And beyond all this insecurity, I certainly have not been able to achieve much self-love or self-forgiveness. Just writing these issues out, I wanted to have a couple big buckets of whiskey or one or three bong loads. Well, my false self does. Once I found pot in college, I sure jumped in with both feet. Kind of especially liked looking like a presentable guy while fairly buzzed. I didn't really drink hard until I was 40 or 50 years ago old, but then again, with both feet, numbing my pain was how I lived. My God was a all-seeing, omnipotent, punishing God. I, like a lot of us, felt I deserved what I got. 1982, I was in a bad accident on Cathedral Oaks Road, struck by a drunk driver. The people that came out, because the sound of the crash was so violent, left me in the middle of the road because I was laying there in a pool of blood, looked like a goner. I was convinced that this happened, was allowed to happen by my God, because I was dating two girls at once. I'm not kidding that I was somehow being untrue, and this was God's way of smacking me back. Well, I was always looking for outward approval, and then I became the people pleaser poster child. I met a young girl who I fell hard for. She was 19, I was 22. We dated on and off for 13 years. Through some really bizarre behaviors, didn't quite make sense. Finally, she told me of the horrific abuse she had endured. I do believe now evil exists. Given the opportunity, I would have happily watched her sick stepfather die a slow and painful death. What I did do instead was say, I'll give you a safe life. I'll make sure that little girl never lives in fear. I can be married and celibate. I can do all these things and more. Then I'll earn my place in heaven. I thought by providing all this that she would somehow heal, somehow realize what a wonderful man I was. And her past trauma would heal and go away. We'd go on to be some super couple with super kids and a super life. What I got was 23 years of the most abject loneliness possible. Sleeping alone most of my marriage, attempting to purchase her approval with homes and jewelry and travel around the globe, wonderful artwork, etc., etc. And I came out of this marriage truly not knowing who I was or am. A pretty nice freaking bottom. We talk in ACA about doing the work and quite often employing a therapist who understands the 12-step work. And I was fortunate to find such a counselor to begin my recovery. While accepting none of us has achieved perfection, I found some wonderful strengths. Both serenity prayers are such saving graces to me. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things and people I can't change. That clears the decks of so much trash. I walk daily with those prayers inside my head and my heart, and I'm consistently 100% better because of them. My fellow travelers, give me strength. I have loved you all. When I recognize that we are all on similar paths, one of the greatest gifts and strengths given to me is the gift I've learned of just listening to your shares, not judging, not rushing into help, just being there. My sponsor gives me strength. I'm fairly new to this program and only now just getting to step 3 and 4. This has been a wonderful walk, and I love him so very much. My therapist has led me into working with my body and recognizing my triggers and processing them in a healthy way. He's led me into expanding my thought process, into reading and studying Joseph Campbell, Carl Jung, Thich Nhat Hanh, and many more. I'm finding strength and peace by and for myself, knowing that healing from the inside is the only kind of healing that matters right now. I am beginning to discover a significantly new and glorious relationship with my higher power. My hopes are that I become the person my dog thinks I am. I hope I can continue to experience emotional sobriety. I hope I can forgive myself. I hope I can love myself. I hope I can find my true inner child. And I hope to grow with this ACA community and be at peace to realize that I am enough. Thank you.
Thank you, Tommy.
Great. Thank you. That was wonderful.
Thank you, Tommy.
Thank you, Tommy.
Thank you.